Danger.
All range mode.
Welcome to the show.
Throat pain?
Yeah. Welcome to the show. This is the All Range Mode Podcast, Season 1, Episode 11. Thanks for joining me, thanks for joining us. My name is Joe. To my right is Chad.
You're low!
Chad's right, we got Doug.
Hey!
And back to myself. So, how's it going, guys?
It's good to be here.
Yeah. A lot less people this week, which
could be a little bit more
just
relaxed.
Sit back, relax,
cool,
enjoy.
Just a nice, smooth evening.
So the first thing I want to talk about is obviously we're going to get into the updates for Star Wars, things like that. In the next coming decade, we'll be talking a lot about Star Wars. So the thing is, it's been confirmed now. The writer for Star Wars was an assistant of Matthew Broderick back in the day. Michael Arndt. I'm gonna look this guy up.
He had double negatives in his last name.
This guy Michael Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, Arndt.
That was right.
I wonder how you pronounce that. So the story about this guy was that he was an assistant for Matthew Broderick in like the Inspector Gadget era.
Oh God!
He's this guy's like an assistant. That was 1999. The original Inspector Gadget came out, and he decides he's gonna jump ship. And I don't know, take some time to figure his life out or something like that. So he reappears in 2006, or probably maybe 2005, because obviously it takes some time to get these things done. But with Little Miss Sunshine, a script for Little Miss Sunshine. He wrote that, went ahead to win an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for that movie. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah. It's a very good movie.
I don't remember it that much. I remember there was a lot of dark humor.
Steve Carell plays like the first non-serious role of his career.
Yeah, and I heard when he was cast in that movie, he was not like a name in Hollywood at that time. He was cast well before like The Office had aired.
Was Bruce Almighty his first? That was like his first. Big
no, he was on. Sure. He was a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Oh, was
like
he really?
Stephen Colbert. Yeah, Steve Carell was an early correspondent on The Daily Show, and nice. I remember like thinking like that's where I recognized him from.
Okay,
was from The Daily Show.
I always grouped that movie with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah,
Jim Carrey movie, because they're both kind of similar. Like they have those big comedy actors, but they're kind of dark. Indian movies.
Oh, Eternal Sunshine is amazing.
Mm-hmm. They're both really good too. Like,
yeah, that movie was really good. I'm glad we all agree on that. So anyway, Little Miss Sunshine, he wrote that, and this guy seems to take his time in between movies, right? Like that was in 2006. He won an Oscar for that. Didn't appear again until 2010 when they had him rewrite Toy Story 3.
So he got brought in to rewrite it?
Yeah, well, there's the original, there's the big players who had been involved with Toy Story before. Andrew Stanton is the Pixar guy. Lee Unkrich. These are all Pixar guys who were involved with the first two movies. So they probably had, like a story treatment. And then Michael Arndt came in to, write
so it's like adapted screenplay kind of thing?
Yeah, write the actual screenplay. Like, just like he's doing with Star Wars. I mean, I'm sure Lucas has these treatments, but he comes in to make it like what it actually was.
Okay. So he adapts it to the movie itself.
And there's a lot of things that were like I read up on it, and he did have a lot to do with the actual, some of the big things that happened in Toy Story 3. I know they had,
Toy Story 3 is the best one.
It has the deepest, they managed to take those characters that we already know and make it such more like there's a point in that movie where they all collectively decide and overcome the fact that they're all about to die, and they just hold hands and deal with death, and that's something that you don't expect like a Pixar character, like a cartoon character to go through. I was almost in tears at the end of Toy Story. Actually, you know what?
I was twice.
I was in tears. Like when they were all, when they committed to death, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I was blown away. And then when Andy hands his when Andy gives his toys away, I was choked up over that. Yeah. That was where it got me, because I was thinking about like my daughter, and I was like, oh my God, like,
he gives his Woody to that little girl.
I don't know. I still haven't seen it.
So I was blown away. Yeah, and I mean, obviously, he's gotten work since Toy Story 3. He did the screenplay for an upcoming Hunger Games movie.
And, oh wow.
Yeah, and he says, and also in 2015, so I don't know, like, if this guy, you know, he's got two big movies coming out in 2015, now it's Star Wars Episode 7 and this Pixar movie that apparently, like, takes you inside the mind, like, the whole movie takes place inside the mind, much like Eternal Sunshine, which is a...
Really?
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, 2015, takes you inside the mind, untitled Pixar, directed by Pete Docter, who also did Up and Monsters, Inc., and the original Toy Story. So, I mean, like, they, at Pixar, they have had a lot of success in storytelling. And I couldn't imagine a better, you know, storyteller to take over the franchise. Obviously, they found somebody who really cares about character, story. Like, he's able to take existing characters and deepen them quite a bit. So, I'm looking forward to it. You know, we'll hear about directors in the future. But that's the upcoming Star Wars news. I mean, I think it's a great choice.
Yeah,
from the limited information I have about this guy,
it's within house too. Like,
yeah.
Disney owns Pixar.
Yeah, and I'm glad, like, it's not.
He's awesome. He won his fucking Oscars. Get him to do it.
Yeah, he's an Oscar winning. I mean, Toy Story was nominated too for screenplay.
That is brilliant. Like, existing characters.
Yeah,
rewritten for just like a newer generation or.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he did do that with Toy Story. Like, I haven't seen it, but that's what he was hired to do.
You ain't seen three?
I haven't seen three yet.
Buddy, it's Dollar House Blu-ray.
Yeah, I really want to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
Didn't we all get drunk and go see it?
No. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know about drunk. What did we get in a fight? We almost got in a fight going to see a movie we got drunk prior to.
Was that the time that...
Jackass?
I don't know. I don't know.
Some guy was like, fuck you.
Oh, what was that?
We were being really loud.
It might have been Behind Jackass. People. It wasn't Toy Story, though.
Yeah. Toy Story.
I think it was Jackass 3. There was one movie where you and I went to the restaurant across the parking lot and got those giant fucking...
Montana's?
Yeah, pitchers of beer. I don't know. What movie was that? I don't even remember what that was.
I have a fart from that night that I recorded. Nice. Played at the end of the show.
So I just want to say...
I'll email it to you.
I just want to say... I want to say this out loud and have it on record that I think the ultimate, you know, opening scene for Episode 7 is Leia's on a consular ship, like a diplomatic mission or something like that. It gets boarded by a Sith, just like in Episode 4, and Leia runs over, finds R2, and is like, help me, Luke. Help me, Luke. Like, I need your help, that kind of thing. And this time, Princess Leia does not live through that ordeal.
Instead,
the death of Princess Leia as the beginning of Episode 7, I think that is my ultimate starting to a new trilogy. And
that would be amazing.
Yeah, and help me, Luke. And then R2 goes out to find Luke, and maybe he doesn't even find him in the first movie. Maybe he finds somebody else. That is, I'm just putting it on record. That's what I want to happen, and we'll see how it turns out. Get back to you in 3 years.
Carrie Fisher's 2-minute cameo.
Oh, she's enormous.
Please help me, Luke.
I'm very scared. Like, it's looking like those three characters are going to be more, like, big parts of those movies, or at least involved. I don't want to say big parts, but at least involved in it. And I'm worried
they're not.
They better get them in shape. Like,
yeah.
Mark Hamill, like, Carrie Fisher. I mean, Harrison Ford's been pretty decent.
I recently watched an interview with Mark Hamill, and it was basically kind of like an E.T. thing in the 80s, right before... It was like the weekend before Return of the Jedi was coming out in theaters, and it was an interview with him. And the reason it's like getting really popular now is because he talks about Episode 7 in it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, maybe sometime in the 2000s we're planning to do Episode 7, and I'd love to do it. But the way they introduced Mark Hamill, they're like, and here we have actor Mark Hamill, who's already a millionaire at the age of 28, just like set him up like he was like this huge star who would be on E.T. all the time. And then after that movie, nothing.
Well, he just
nothing.
Well,
I never knew you had that much praise then. I mean, I guess it only makes sense, but it's just funny to see it in, like, a reporter praise him like that, because that never happens.
I wonder what, like, a big franchise would do to your motivation.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean? Like, you go
through... You're a star.
Yeah, you go through that, and it's just... And, like, you're immediately typecast,
Well, a lot of actors get through it.
Harrison Ford seemed to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was awesome. He was just awesome.
Yeah. I don't know why
Daniel Craig will do it with James Bond.
I don't know why he's... Like,
he
Harrison
did beforehand.
Ford... Harrison Ford
when he
is
James
Bond. Yeah, sorry. Harrison Ford is vocal about his, like, disdain for the character of Han Solo, and I just don't see it. Like, he's got such an affinity for Indiana Jones for some reason. But he's never been open in talking about Han Solo, but money talks, and I know he will do money pictures.
Yeah, he said he would for The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Basically.
I know Carrie Fisher said, like, if the price why wouldn't I? Like, of course I will. Like, it's work.
Help.
And Mark Help. Hamill. Mark Hamill.
Help.
I feel.
Help me.
I feel like Hamill's the only intelligent one who's, like, he cares about the actual character and the actual saga.
Yeah.
I think he actually has an appreciation for the character of Luke Skywalker outside of his own pocket. So that's my Star Wars news. Thanks for listening, guys. So, we're going to talk about the World War Z trailer that just came out. We actually just kind of had a chance to review the trailer. I'm going to start off with, personally, to me, it looks a lot like Troy, Caliber, Brad Pitt.
I can't get this out of my head. I mean, think about this. I think it was between 6 to 8 months ago, they wanted to come out with a trailer for this movie, and... The whole thing was such a wreck after it had having been in production for so long that they couldn't even get a trailer together. And if you think about that while you watch that, it's like the shots in the trailer weren't that good. I don't know.
Well, it's...
I don't think it's going to be good.
The subject material for the World War Z like story is written more as like historical documents. And here's kind of like track records of things that went on during this time period. So... The fact that they're making up this family, like story within that, I'm not sure if that's going to work. First of all, what I meant by the Troy Caliber Brad Pitt, it's like I like Brad Pitt more of like art movies and more experimental characters, rather than I don't like him in
the hero kind of
Mr. and Mrs. Smith role, Troy, where he's just playing handsome man, you know, like handsome man A. Let's get Brad Pitt. The fact that he's making it, I mean, he seems to have his pick of the litter as far as, like, scripts or projects are concerned.
He's making it?
He's very involved. I know he's, like, pioneering. Like, the script was attached with Brad Pitt, like, when they were selling it. Mm-hmm. It's like, we got this story, World War Z. Brad Pitt wants to star in it. That kind of thing. And up until now, I've heard that Brad Pitt will make one movie without getting his next movie ready. Like, in order to free up scripts, that's how he was able to be in Inglourious Basterds. He made a movie, and then he was just, like, he was done that, and he had nothing lined up. He doesn't line up scripts.
Okay.
Which, he's so successful that when he's done making one, there'll be 10 more ready for him to pick. You know, so, like, that's what I heard. And then, hearing that, yeah, the production value, or the production has gone over about 6 months already for this. It was supposed to be out this year.
Really?
Yeah, they had script problems, but they were filming while the script was being written.
Oh.
And they didn't really know how it was going to end. And actually, the plus side of this is that Damon Lindelof, I think, I'll try and confirm this right now, but Damon Lindelof got hired to rewrite the script, which he's proven that he's good at. But they hired him saying, like, we got 3/4 of a movie, we just need an ending. And that's bad news.
Yeah, from what I heard, that was it. They had 3/4 of the movie, rough cut, done, and they were just like, they didn't want to release any of it.
That's
they
crazy.
Said it wasn't good.
So they decided to fill in the story gaps with bad looking.
But
zombies.
I mean, think about that. having just watched that trailer, it's like the fact that it took you that long just to give me that little mundane trailer. with the Inception ripoff soundtrack.
Yeah, so we got Max Brooks, who was probably... Yeah, he wrote the book, World War Z, An Oral History of the Zombie... sorry, let me see. I can't see. Like, he wrote a book called Oral History. So it is more documented things. You know, like, recalling of things that happened in that time period.
That's cool.
Well, it's... I mean,
and then this... The Matthew Carnahan guy, who I anticipate... Or, sorry, who I expect wrote the screenplay. And then Damon Lindelof, who was... hired to rewrite it.
It'll be good. It'll be good.
I don't know.
I hope it doesn't go I Am Legend.
I
Will Smith always sucked. So
I liked I Am Legend.
I like Will Smith.
It's not going to be better than I Am Legend. I'm calling it now.
The zombies look...
I Am Legend was terrible.
I liked it. I enjoyed that movie.
Have you guys seen the other stories that were based on that same... Omega Man, I know, I think was the same story. There's a couple of books that are in that phase, and I hear I Am Legend... is 100% different from how the book ends. Like they read their, like, the third ending now in that story is completely different from the source material.
Well, that's what I was gonna say though. Like World War Z, just a zombie movie with Brad Pitt in it. When you boil it down to brass tacks,
yeah.
I mean, there's this source material and whatever, but they can follow that however loosely they'd like to.
Well, I was completely turned around. Like I do not like the zombie genre. It is way overblown. It's almost like vampires these days, right? But
it's worse.
I've been turned around with Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Like I was not interested in even watching Walking Dead at all because zombies are boring to me, pretty much. Like, and the first season of Walking Dead was the same way. How many weird sounding headshots am I going to get in this season of television? Like the sound effects just and like gross exploding heads. But they started dealing with, like, the humanity of the story and, like, how people are dealing with this kind of stuff. You cannot get that story in a two-hour movie. You just can't, like...
What did you think of last week's episode, by the way?
Wow. Last week's episode, I don't even want to talk about it because Chad probably hasn't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Oh,
that is a terrible burden. I almost want to, like, record a 15-minute podcast just about Walking Dead.
I want to say I didn't like it that much.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what didn't you
like about it? You were the minority, right?
I am the minority.
What didn't you like about it?
I didn't like the way that went down. I just didn't think it was good.
Okay, well, look forward to a...
When you say that...
Spoil it.
Look forward to a spoiler cast. Doug, we can chat about this.
We can't talk about Boardwalk either. That was like the best Boardwalk ever last week, too.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into it. I mean, we can't be held back. Let this be a lesson to you.
No, go fuck yourself.
Okay.
It just happened.
Boardwalk?
It was a week ago.
If anyone's listening to this podcast, they haven't seen it yet.
Yes, they have. A week ago, they saw it.
Okay.
I watched it. I watched those shows right when I get home from work.
Pick one and we'll spoil that one.
Spoilers ahead.
Which one
has one?
Walking Dead, because I'm probably never going to
watch it. Okay. Walking Dead. So, the big thing that happened this week is we lost a couple of characters. One who I was looking forward to losing since episode one, since season one, episode one. Because I think in season one, the characters were not written well at all. No. You had...
That's what made me stop watching.
You had a black guy who acted like a black guy. You had a redneck who acted like a redneck.
You ain't going no sad tonight.
And you had like such stereotypical, like just art, like stereotypes there were. And I was just like, I'm not watching this for... like, you know, you watch one season, you may as well watch all of them. And who knows how long... maybe watching these terrible characters. So T-Dog was the one guy who had nothing.
T-Dog.
His name is T-Dog.
Is this the guy from the first episode?
He's
the black guy, yeah.
The black guy.
He dies?
I'm in. So T-Dog.
I'm watching it for that.
T-Dog was one of the reasons I didn't like the show. He was in season one. He was barely in season two.
I was just going to say, to be fair, T-Dog, they took him out of the show. He's not a character in that show.
He's in
a couple shots.
What was it, season 2, episode 1, where he hurt his arm in the stupidest way possible?
Yeah,
he like was trying to get out of a car and he like slipped and
cut it on some rust.
Oh.
And then they had to get him medicine and it was this whole thing and I just didn't want to see it go down that way.
He did have a good ending.
Let him rust out.
T-Dog had a good ending.
He had a good
one. I was hoping that him and that old bag were going to both fucking die in that episode because I don't like her either. No, the woman with the abusive husband.
Oh, you don't like her?
I don't really like her. Because she was always on...
In the comics, she's young and, like, attractive looking. and her and the T-Dog character in the comics are sleeping together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, she's old, gross, and she has a husband, what do you call it? A husband who beats her up. Yeah, that was kind of like cool.
Battered season one. Woman.
Yeah, she was battered. But her, she's had no story whatsoever, and she kept agreeing with who's the guy who kept fixing the RV who we lost
Dale.
Last season, Dale. Yeah, and I couldn't stand Dale either. So I'm glad he's gone. But you know, maybe this woman will have something else to do. I'm sorry, I don't know their names very well because I don't care about those characters. But we also lost a big we had a big loss this week.
Yeah,
which was
Lori.
It's
dead.
Rick's wife. Mother of...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know how that wasn't spoiled for you on Facebook, by the way. Everyone on my Facebook was just like, I can't believe Lori's dead. It was like their status.
Well, I don't know what the fuck that is.
Well, the situation was...
That, like, oh my God.
Through Lori? Season 3, we were talking like... what's Rick's son's name?
Zyke, I think. Mike.
Carl.
Oh, yeah.
So...
That's my next one.
Yeah, so... Carl's mom, Rick's wife, the whole season they've been setting up at how she was gonna need a cesarean section.
Okay.
Carl was born through C-section, and most of the time, you know, quite often, if you give birth through C-section, the next child will also need a C-section because you know, it's just not the it that's just how it works. So moving on, I will get into that. But
Sipa,
have a sip of the hobby. So,
master. Yo, Sipa,
a sip of the hobby, master hobby. So they've been setting up all season that one of them would need to perform a C-section on Lori, and the one of the inmates that they discovered early in the season had a vendetta. He survived, and we didn't know he had a vendetta with Rick's crew. And he cut all the chains that were keeping the zombies out, and there was just a flood of zombies. Oh no, he cut all the chains and then set off the alarm.
Yeah.
So just swarms of zombies are coming in, and the whole group is segregated to like different parts of the prison, and all the chaos. Laurie goes into labor, and there's nobody there to perform the C-section, and only Carl and one of the other girls is there, the hot one. Is there. So nobody's there to perform a C-section. She tries to deliver the baby, and it's failing because she cannot do natural birth. And she convinces Carl. It's like, you need to open me up. Like, Carl and the other...
Maggie.
And Maggie. So Maggie performs the C-section. All she says is, cut along my existing scar. So they cut her open, take the baby out, she dies, and then Carl is the one who has to take out his mom before she turns.
But the thing I didn't like about it was just the way she had come to terms with it right away and
I disagree.
that was going to happen. No, that's what happened in the show.
Okay, well, women do crazy things during childbirth. They're not thinking about themselves.
Okay, but I'm just saying, that's what happened, and she was just like... prepared to do this whole thing, and then he just stepped up right away to do that. And I get that this season they're trying to show he's grown up a bit more, but you know, he went from nothing to that, and he's just fine with it. Like,
I think that
Rick was more upset than he was.
I think they did a good job at setting that up. Kids don't know how to deal with that shit. Maybe he's got a dark side to him,
dude,
like maybe Shane's influence.
It would be so much more horrible than that. I think, and
but
I
she
think
was
they
already
kind of showed it more.
He didn't have to kill his mom though. She was already passed away, and he just had to stop her from turning
he
into
had
a
to
zombie.
Cut her open. And...
No, he didn't cut her open.
Oh,
he just pulled the trigger, made sure she had a bullet in her head.
Yeah, it just Yikes. Came about too fast, and I didn't like the way
Carl.
Another reason is she dies in a different way in the comic book that I preferred.
How does she die in the comic?
I might spoil something that's to come by revealing it.
That's fine.
Okay. So, are you sure?
Yeah, if it didn't happen in the show, then...
I'm saying could potentially still happen in the show, and just... they can change
I'm fine with that.
She dies.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, so basically what happens is... The two groups get in a war. Like a conflict between the governor's group and the prison, and it's known that, like...
Which I anticipate will happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that does happen in the show. So they're going to come and attack them, and basically, it. This sounds kind of weak, but she has the baby, and it's fine. And the baby's walking around, and she gives a natural birth to the baby. But basically, they storm the camp. Everyone gets separated, kind of thing, just like how it happened that way. And the governor shoots her and the baby.
And the baby.
And they're both dead.
Wow.
Interesting.
Like, what, like she's carrying the baby and running with it, and he shoots her, thinking she's a zombie, actually. And the bullet goes through her and the baby.
Wow. Ooh.
And it's just Rick and Carl. Like, they both see that happen. And the way it was written and drawn, it was really, really
Yeah,
cool.
I can imagine.
And I was let down by that.
Well, so you're setting up the conflict between Rick and the governor, like, pretty serious there.
Well...
Whereas now, there isn't any...
To get into it even a bit more, so Rick... In the comic, when they first meet the governor, like, Andrea and McCone or whatever, the black samurai girl is...
Yeah.
Rick's with them. Like, it's the three of them, and Glenn's there too, I think. And they all get taken hostage, like, right away. You find out, like, he's not a good person, and he cuts Rick's hand off, his right hand, so he just has no hand, and Rick escapes. So Rick hates him, like, there's already that there, and then that
Weird.
Happens.
So I imagine he has one hand?
In the comic, and, like, on the front page of the, or the cover of the comic, it's Rick with one hand.
Much like Earl, thing. Like, Earl has one hand?
Yeah.
Well, I, you know,
Earl's
like,
also not a character in the comic, so I don't know what they're doing.
Maybe, there. Yeah. But, like, I can understand that you get round two, and, like, it's not the same media, right? Like, comic and television.
Definitely
like,
not. I was just
so
saying.
So, you're, like, they're adapting it. It's not like, which one, it's not which one do you like more, it's you have both now.
No, and I said that earlier at the start of the season on this podcast, that I was excited to discuss the differences, because I know what happens going
on. I'm glad to know the differences.
So... I'm kind of looking forward to see it, and this was obviously the first big one of this season with the comic, and yeah, truth be told, I was a little let down by it.
Well, because you prefer the comic story.
I prefer the comic Death of Laurie.
Yeah.
I won't say for sure
see,
that I prefer
me,
the comic story.
Like, like watching it without knowing the comic outcome, like I was pretty blown away by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can
I was
can
blown away in the comic too, like
yeah.
Laurie's dead.
I don't know what I expected to do out of that, but it kept bringing me back to the MASH finale, where they're in a bunker and they're with this Vietnamese woman and she's got a baby, and they're hiding out, right? Like they don't like there's Vietnamese soldiers are infiltrating the base, the medical complex, and a woman a Vietnamese woman is forced to smother her child, like in order, because if the baby cries, then they all get caught and they all die. And the Vietnamese woman is like forced to smother her child in the finale of MASH, and that's what pushes Hawkeye or Alan Alda over the edge, and that's why he leaves. I remember hearing that for the first time. Like I think it was it on This American Life that
yeah.
they played that sound clip. I haven't even seen this episode, but they played the clip of Alan Alda's reaction to that. And it was overwhelming. Like, I could not believe that you hear this great story about MASH, the comedy, and that's how it ends. Wow. So I thought that, like, that was such an iconic thing that if you put a mother and her newborn baby into a same situation, it would have to be the same kind of outcome. Where if... And they discussed it in season two. What if we, like, if we can't have a crying baby trying to run away from zombies, things like that. So I was always puzzled at how this would run through. Like, I'm not sure how it happens in the comic. You might know. But I'm excited to discuss it. Like, Laurie's gone now. What's Rick gonna do? He's not always been like the father of this. Like,
well,
I'm thinking
that's
gonna be the Asian guy and who's the girl?
Maggie.
Maggie. I think Maggie is going to take ownership of this child because she's not in the comics.
No, Maggie's
as much.
No, she's huge in the comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you told me she died or something like that.
No, not that. Not yet that I've read. See, the other thing too is I've read the first half. I think to date there's 106 issues of the comic out.
Yeah.
And I've read the first 50. And
wow.
The cliffhanger on the 50th comic is Laurie dying. So she dies much like she would die. Like, if you're following the comics chapters to seasons, she dies in like the end of season 4.
Do you think that had any anything to do with like public opinion of that character? She was written wrong from day one, and nobody liked her.
True, but do you like, other than Maggie, do you like any of the girls in that show?
I like the blonde girl.
Oh, the little girl? Yeah, she's...
No. The blonde who is now with the governor, or like hanging out with the governor in that show.
I didn't, I like but her. They spun her around, and now I like her.
She's the only originally. One who makes, like, rash decisions, where she's not... I don't feel like as a scripted character, she still surprises me. But I like her. I kind of liked Lori.
I took Lori for what she was. Just
how much the time has elapsed in the season, like so far, like from the beginning of from the zombie the outbreak to now?
I think they say like a year.
Really?
About a year.
Do zombies not starve or die off? Like
they say, they're getting thinner, but they haven't.
They died. Actually, well, they explain
they eat animals and stuff.
They explain one thing about what's the black samurai's character's name?
McCone.
So she has drone zombies with her. They have no arms and no bottom jaw.
So they can't bite.
And so they can't bite and they can't attack, right? And she carries them with them, and they didn't explain it yet. Or sorry, they didn't explain it up until now.
Zombies glow blue when other zombies are close.
I don't know what the reference. I don't understand the reference. But what yeah, like if oh really?
Blade glows
oh, blue. Okay. So yeah. So she walks around with those, and her scent is almost gone, and like they don't notice that there's like human or living flesh around, because those zombies are kind of like create like a protective barrier around them with their scent and like their aura, or I guess so. Like, but
does
they
she walk like a zombie when she's with them.
No, she just carries them around with like a chain. But they do explain in the latest episode. It's like I was glad that they did it. In a couple of minutes of dialogue, they had a scientist who's just like, cut off their arms so they can't attack, cut off their mouths, and they just go into like autopilot. They can't eat anymore, so they lose the want to eat. So you can just carry them around and hide your scent and stuff like that. So I'm glad that they explained that, because I was wondering about that. Like, is in the comics, is there supernatural type things, or can this all be explained scientifically? Mm-hmm. And we got our resolution with that, so that was kind of nice.
Games.
We're talking about games today on the show. We're talking about them because they're all we know. We hope you will join us. You'll be entertained. Because we fucking love video games.
Well, Dan was supposed to be here to talk to me about Halo 4 because he bought it as well. We waited in line for 8.5 hours.
Evidently, he's probably still playing it.
Yeah, and just not answering his phone.
So that was fun, hanging out with you guys in the line.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe brought us... hot chocolate. Was it mint?
Mint hot chocolate,
yeah. Mint hot chocolate.
Which we then
spiked. At like 11:30. Yeah. No, it was earlier. It was like 11.
Yeah.
Oh. Spike before goes. The line, he was trying to tell me about how mint hot chocolate and booze is like his favorite thing.
Yeah. we did that night. The year prior, like for Battlefield 3.
Oh, yeah.
Was it for Battlefield?
That's the last time I waited in line.
Yeah.
Or maybe there
was Skyrim.
Ooh.
You guys didn't wait for Mass Effect, though, did you? Didn't you all just kind of get there at midnight and pick it up?
What the hell? That scared the hell out of me.
I did, too. I thought the power went out.
The lights went off there for a second.
Oh, it's Hurricane Sammy. What is it called?
Sammy.
Hurricane Sandwich.
Oh, there we go.
Hurricane Sandwich.
I thought that was Slender when they came up and turned the light off.
So, yeah, how are you how are you liking Halo 4?
It is the best Halo for sure. I don't know why I've never said it before, but like, I like playing the multiplayer in other Halo games, but the campaigns were always bad. Like, let's be honest, they were just...
I wouldn't know.
They really enjoy them. Like, they were never really good.
The only experience I had with Halo is I tried to play the Reach campaign, and it was really like bro military kind of thing, and yeah. I wasn't into being part of that team.
Yeah.
And I lost interest pretty quick.
Yeah, and Bungie had a thing of like... making it very cartoony. Like, the grunts were always running around like, and the colors look very cartoony. It's not. Like, they they kind of rebooted it as far as the graphics go to make it look more realistic. Hmm. And in turn doing that, they have to re-render all the characters, making them look more realistic. So
yeah,
you see these enemies that you're fighting and they look like scary and you look real. Everything looks more real. And it gives you a different feeling right there.
There's a lot more weight to the environment, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks less Smash Brothers-y and more like... It's serious. Like, even like shooting the guns...
Yeah, oh my god, the guns too. Yeah. Like
everything feels heavier. I noticed, I talk a lot about maybe comparing the new Halo to how much it reminds me of Metroid. And playing through the first couple of minutes, you notice right away you feel more there.
Yeah.
It feels more
organic,
tangible.
Okay,
you know, like I could reach out and touch something in this game. Even like touching the buttons, Master Chief's hand comes out and just like beep 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 beep. Like his hand will come like through the screen.
Yeah,
just like in those old Metroid games or in the GameCube Metroid games. True. I noticed it right away. Yeah, it feels much more lived in environments and stuff like that.
Yeah, because they always said you want to be behind the mask of Master Chief. Like everybody puts themselves in this position. Every player of the game just wants to become Master Chief. They have a vision of him in their mind as they're playing, and to make it more immersive like that, it's so good. I wanted to be like against it, arguing with Dan, because I knew he was just gonna be like, it's fucking awesome, it's sick.
You wanted to counter argue?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to advocate, but. It's so good.
Also, the opening cutscene. See, I only played like the first 15 minutes of the game, but like the opening cutscene is uncanny.
Yeah.
Like a lot, the upcoming Metal Gear Solid game.
Yeah.
I was very impressed where like at times you couldn't tell if it was CG or live actors. Mm-hmm. You get that same feeling from the videos in Halo 4.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Like, yeah, like I've always really, been, really good.
I've always been more into campaigns than actually playing them online. Like, same thing, I've bought and everything.
Me as well.
Since Halo 2, I've bought them all at launch, and the first thing I did was beat all the campaigns.
Me too.
Like, before playing it online at all. And, yeah, they, like you said, I mean, they're always awesome, and I want to play them all, but not that impressive. But from what you're saying with this one, that sounds good.
Here's a testament to the game. I always buy games for the campaign, playing the campaign first and then multiplayer. Like, Battlefield 3 aside, because the campaign was fucking terrible. but I always buy games to play for the main story. Mm-hmm. And then multiplayer is something of an add-on. But bought Halo. I played the first mission the first night, and it was up to like 2:30 in the morning or something like that. I had school the next day. But then I got home. I turned on multiplayer. I was like, I'll just try one game. I've been playing it ever since.
Yeah. You haven't played the campaign?
I played two levels of the campaign. And so far, wow. it's like the most diverse Halo I've ever played. Two missions.
I don't know if I've ever... Aside from multiplayer games, like Smash Brothers or... like even Battlefield, I would say... Because Bad Company 2, I've never even seen the campaign.
Yeah.
I've never, yeah, like
I plan to get achievements.
It's one or the other for me. I mean, just like Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah,
I don't even. I played maybe 5 minutes of the campaign, and then
like 60 hours.
Yeah, 60 hours of the multiplayer, where I would just truck around with my fucking horse, and I was like, "There's a cool beast," and I would stop and stalk the beast for like maybe half an hour, try and take that thing down. Like
I remember storming the camps online.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Those were really fun.
Yeah, that was really good. I can't, like, there was no achievements for the online gameplay in that game.
You had quite a bit, I thought.
Well,
there wasn't.
There was yeah. There was it was maybe like a fifth of the achievements were for playing it online. But yeah, I never even touched the campaign in that game, even though I hear that it's remarkable. But
It suffers the the Rockstar campaign vibe.
Go here now, and like you'll get on your you'll follow a hub. You'll go to a waypoint on your map, and they'll be like, "I need you to come out to the Red Rocks or something like that."
It took me 15 minutes to ride.
You'll ride out there, kill everybody, and it doesn't fast track you back to the waypoint. So they're just like, "Meet us back in town," and then they'll just be gone off the screen, and it's like, "Fuck." And you got to ride your horse back to town. And if you decide that you want to talk to that person again, I need you again. And it's like, they don't have, there's no grasp on, okay, like, players could be coming directly back and playing it immediately after, or they could be coming back after a day or two of playing this game, but you don't get the sense of that at all. It's, everything is so urgent, right? So if you decide to rush back and play another mission within that mission, like tree, it'll be as if like days have gone by, and they're, but like,
it could have been immediately.
Yeah, you could ride your horse back and like, oh, I'm glad you came back. These boys have been messing with my hogs or something like that. And they're like, it's like, I just talked to you 5 minutes ago and we killed all these people, uh-huh, and now I'm back here and you've got, and this,
you're
other problem.
You're stuck in this loop.
Yeah, and it's like, because it's so open, like you've got to kind of take advantage of that, or else the game falls for it. Hmm. And I noticed that right away. And I can't stand fetch quest. And I know every game essentially is a fetch quest, but I don't know. Just that's something about that. Like, obviously, the alternative is Skyrim, where every single mission is the same.
Yeah,
I need you to go out here, figure it out, and you go into the dungeon,
awesome,
and kill everybody.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun to discover in Skyrim, yeah, because there's stuff
Skyrim
to discover.
Had more
on the
way to it. Like the one thing when you're doing the, I forget what I was doing. I was on some quest in one cavern or something, and you pick up a jewel that just looks like every other jewel, and it starts talking to you, and it's a danger
yeah
quest. Just, yeah, I was once a great ruler. Like, oh my god, I'm doing this quest now.
Something about Skyrim, like,
it's so good.
I'm not sure about Red Dead, but Skyrim had the gratification of leveling up.
Yeah, the wet,
like, GTA
yeah,
games,
you,
I don't think have that.
Well, I'm sure there was more. I haven't played Red Dead, but I'm sure there was more depth to the Skyrim leveling system.
Oh, yeah, but in Skyrim, just like, give me as many people as I can kill so I can level up my archery or something like that.
Yeah, Skyrim was so open that you could choose what you wanted to do. And
I want
to
play it
became,
right now.
Became,
I know.
It's so
good. That's the biggest loss of my career this last year, of my, gaming career, is giving up Skyrim. You know, you don't know what you have till it's gone, type of thing.
Yeah,
like
I gave up my Skyrim this past Tuesday to get the Halo scam.
Oh man! And now you want to play it so bad.
Yeah, I've wanted to, but I never have.
The problem is
whenever I'm away from home, I want to play it. But when I get home, I could care less.
Whenever I see a Skyrim video, it's running on high-end PC with modded out and upscaled, and I'm just like, oh, that game was beautiful. But I know I'll put it in, and it'll look like fucking PS2. Joke from last week. PS2 joke. Yeah. But yeah, that's another thing I kind of wanted to talk about today, is that developers have gotten comfortable showing off their games on high-end PC as if they're showing us what
if
we're
going to
get.
If they're developing it for PC.
Yeah. If
well,
it's
who is it these days?
PC as well.
I'm like, the gap between console and PC customer is very rapidly narrowing.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because of
yeah
Steam and stuff like that.
Steam and PCs are getting cheaper and cheaper, and like,
true.
The like, they'll show it. Like, look at Battlefield 3. They got away with murder showing off that game on high-end
oh
PC.
Oh god!
And now they're doing it with every other thing. Like, I can anticipate that Star Wars 1313 is showing on high-end PC. It's going to be out for Xbox 360 next year.
No, it's coming up for the new Xbox.
I don't know.
And it's
man
not coming out next year.
I don't know. They're getting away with murder, and
oh
like, they're showing off high-end PC like graphics and saying like, new for PlayStation 3 or whatever, like, and I think more and more PC's the way to go for gaming. It's gotta be.
Yeah.
There's like, you just get yourself a fucking pig PC and like running off the next 5 years. It's never like, consoles are never going to catch up to that. Just like, because the
yeah, but you constantly have to be upgrading.
But consoles,
you don't expense. You don't anymore though. That's not that game anymore. It, like, I remember trying to convince my mom that we had to buy a new video card for the family computer, and she was like, I don't understand.
I used to do that
but too. Like, now that it's a bigger world, and computer PCs are so much more like in the front ground,
or you can just get a game PC,
yeah,
so
or
like,
yeah,
they're
definitely
cheap.
Like
cheap.
A red and black, is that what those are you see at Future
yeah
Street?
Well,
Alienware.
I was asking TJ today, like, how much would you need to spend on top-notch PC, and he was like, probably $600.
Yeah, it's not much.
Which is crazy.
And you can just hook it up to your TV.
But still.
Yeah.
PC games, like, the console market is so gigantic that when developers make a game, they're going to want it to come out on every possible system.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to scale it for, or they're going to code it for 360, PS3, and PC.
Well, even big games come out for, like, 3DS.
But you don't see any PC exclusives anymore. You see PC exclusive like graphics.
Yeah, but like the game Diablo and come stuff. Out. Blizzard still makes PC.
Yeah, the MMO. Games.
True.
The
MMO those really can't be done on console very well.
No, they were do you like, remember Torch Diablo 1 came out for PS1?
Yeah. Torchlight came out for Xbox and it was awesome.
Yeah. The MMO thing is strictly PC, but even those games, they're not the ones taking advantage of the high end.
Console manufacturers like Microsoft, Sony, they don't want MMOs to come up with their consoles because if World of Warcraft came out, everyone would be addicted to it.
They wouldn't
be
playing it.
A huge chunk of the population would be addicted to it and would not buy Halo 4 or something like that.
So. I don't know. Do you really think that the business minds are considering those kinds of possibilities?
Absolutely.
We don't want to release something that's too good. Because
we want to drive sales.
Not too good, but just too, like, it doesn't end. It just keeps you going.
Yeah, like, Dan wouldn't buy games for a long time, or Tim, like, our friends wouldn't buy games.
You don't want to release, I've heard this in the, the Ford Motor Company mentality. It's like, you don't want to release the perfect car, because then you will never sell another car. No one will ever need to buy a car again.
Yeah.
And that's bad business. So maybe there is something like that. Like they want restrictions. I know. I've heard EA like sports specifically. Like they'll roll out like 5 or 6 improvements on their game and do them 1 a year.
Yeah.
To just keep you buying that next installment.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. It's good business.
Yeah. Don't throw all your eggs into one basket kind of thing. These ideas.
Moving on, I wanted to reference back one of my predictions has turned out to be false. I stated that there would never be Mario DLC, and we are looking at an age of Mario DLC. I know Super Mario Bros. 2 has DLC, and New Super Mario Bros. U is also expected to get some DLC as well.
Sweet.
So, it's a new age. Looking back, try and catch yourselves. I know I make mistakes every week. I tell you things that I am sure are true.
You said that before?
I said that there would never be Mario DLC because Nintendo was all about having it in the box. Purchasing the full product out of the box.
Really?
Yeah, I said that. So let's try and catch ourselves, and you can also, whoever's listening can...
They're all about making money.
You can catch us, yeah.
Every company's about making money.
It's big business.
Yeah.
Yeah, DLC is a great way to keep making money on the same game.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's see. I don't know if you guys heard about the Silicon Knights versus Epic.
No, but I really am excited to hear about it.
What's up? Okay, for the past 5 years, Silicon Knights, they're based out of, what the hell is that place called? Just north of... St. Catharines. Based out of St. Catharines, Ontario. Just like 3 hours away from us.
Yeah.
They made Eternal Darkness, they made Two Human... X-Men Origins, like the newest one. They made these games, and it's all based on the Unreal Engine, which they licensed from Epic. In 2007, when they were making Two Human for the Xbox, Microsoft approached them and said, make a trilogy for us, make it exclusive for Xbox, and we'll give you whatever you need, kind of thing. So they licensed the Unreal Engine from Epic, which every company seemed to be doing at the time.
Yeah, that's huge. That's a big engine.
Yeah, it powers everything. And so Silicon Knights got it. Halfway through the development of Two Human wasn't running properly. So they blamed Epic for selling them this like crappy engine that wasn't working just so Epic could gain enough money to fund Gears of War and like Unreal Tournament and stuff like that. Which is totally false because the engine runs perfectly for everybody else.
Is it
else.
The same engine?
Oh, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Yeah, like Gears of War is run on the Unreal Engine too, right?
Exactly, yeah. So Silicon Knights like slandered them saying that they're assholes, they're cheats, they made this garbage, sold it to us, it doesn't even work. In the process of licensing the Unreal Engine from Epic, one of the stipulations was to leave it as it is, build from that, like the groundwork of this program. They rewrote a whole bunch of stuff so it would work for Two Human, and then they released Two Human, and then they released X-Men Destiny Origins or whatever the hell it's called, like last year. So since 2007, Silicon Knights has been trying to argue with Epic in court to see, like, they're trying to get money for what they've lost in their time and the development and stuff. And Epic filed a countersuit against them because they edited something that was already copyrighted.
Yeah.
So they go to court. Long story short, Silicon Knights loses their argument. Wow. Epic wins theirs because they win against the copyright. They have to pay Epic $4 million for whatever. I don't know what exactly the charge was, but now, just this past week, Epic has won like another division of this argument, and they're getting paid another $4.5 million. So they're up to $9 million that Silicon Knights has to pay them, and Silicon Knights is ordered to destroy everything with Unreal Engine in it at all. So all the two humans that they shipped, all the X-Men's, all the games that are currently in progress, like in development,
that they claim were built with the Unreal Engine,
they have to.
They're not allowed to print any more copies of those games.
They're not allowed to print them. Anyone that's at the store, they have to recall and destroy them.
Wow.
Get rid of everything.
So is the company bankrupt?
Yeah, but because they've said like layoffs are going left and right, kind of thing. They're laying off people constantly. It's been ongoing for the past couple of years.
They have said it's a pretty bleak situation trying to get a job in gaming. But Ontario now is offered all these incentives.
Oh yeah, like they have Toronto now. Toronto is like a big hub for video games, like instead of Montreal. Ubisoft Toronto, I think their first game is the new Splinter Cell Blacklist or whatever.
That got leaked for Wii U, eh? Like marketing copies of like the cases
were seen
on like store shelves. Yeah, Splinter Cell Blacklist with the Wii U
like what the
moniker
hell?
And everything on the fucking shelf.
That's cool.
Wow.
That's weird. Why don't they just announce it?
They should.
What the hell? I'm scared. I'm a week away from owning this motherfucker. Like, I'm gonna be fine until...
Assassin's Creed is coming out though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they have to market Assassin's Creed before Splinter Cell.
Oh, that's true. It's all just like timing.
Definitely. If you're lucky, you get one game in, you know, every holiday season.
True.
I don't know what I'm like. If I'm expected to play New Super Mario Brothers U until fucking May, hopefully there's something that comes up. Hopefully there's something that's coming out like April, May time frame, like that hasn't been announced yet.
You've got that vast digital Nintendo catalog to.
Okay, well, listen to this. A segue into something different. Bobby Kotick, the president of Activision, has said that. In an interview, he was talking about the Wii U and how releasing Black Ops 2 and stuff like that, it's awesome because there's a new generation of consoles. But he also said there's another one console being released in 2013, like within a year of Wii U's launch. So one console...
Only one.
He has leaked saying that one is coming out in 2013.
So will it be Microsoft, Sony, Valve... Or
it's going to be the new Xbox for sure.
Okay, well, do you think it's going to be PlayStation 4?
I don't know. I think they both stand an equal chance, and I also don't think just because this guy said it means it's going to be one. I think PlayStation.
What
4
this guy? And what this guy?
This Activision guy.
Oh, there's one. I mean, what? No, I didn't.
I mean,
say
there's
it.
One. I think PlayStation and Xbox are direct competitors more so than anyone else, and they're going to release their consoles at
the same
time.
I personally think it's going to be PlayStation 4 first.
When Xbox 360 came out, there was nothing like the first year really to buy, except for Call of Duty and Perfect Dark, which are terrible.
Yeah.
But the following year, it was Gears of War. The following year was Halo 3. The year after that, it was Gears of War 2. The year after that, it was, I think it was ODST. And then... Reach, Gears of War 3, Halo 4, and instead of being like a fall or Christmas kind of game, Gears of War Judgment is coming out in May, which has never happened. Like for a Microsoft IP...
So you think you're on to them? You figured out.
I haven't figured it out. Like it's. I'm pretty sure it's common knowledge now. It is coming out.
Who knows? Maybe Sony will release PS4 in February because Vita worked out.
I have to say though,
hear you me, all range mode out.
All range mode.
Fuck them up.